Content for the following program was provided by the Teton County Library.
Hey, everybody, turn off the TV. Meet me down at the library.
From the back of the stacks.
Welcome to the back of the stacks. I'm Rebecca. Today we're playing stories recorded at the library's live storytelling contest, Cabin Fever Story Slam. Anyone can throw their name in the hat to tell a story. We select 10 storytellers at random. The rules are that you have to tell a story in less than 5 minutes without notes, and it has to be your own true story. You can find out more details at tclib.org/cabinfever. The stories I'm going to play now come from an earlier slam, and the theme was lost and found.
All right, our first storyteller, please give a round of applause and help me welcome Jody Domsky.
So 5 years ago, around this time, I got invited to a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, which I'm sure half of us in this room have done, which is float the Grand Canyon. And, you know, I was so excited. Really expecting all the things you hear, like drinking lots of beer and learning how to use a shiwi and pooping in the wilderness and all of those great things. So 4 years ago, December 27th, we launched on a 29-day trip. I knew three people before that, and there was a group of 13, and it started out like a trip that you would expect. I mean, I can't even explain how majestic that place is. It's unlike any other place in the world. You're so remote. The only way you can tell that the world is still going is by looking up in the canyon walls and seeing the planes go by. And that's how you know the world is still going on. Nobody else was out there because it was a winter trip. We had two other trips pass us. And it was just surreal. And then day 17 happened. We pulled over to a campsite to Tepetz. For those of you that have been there, it's a rocky campsite, small area to sleep, but there's a great hike there, and that was our goal. We had a couple people that wanted to boat to Pete's Creek, and the rest of the group wanted to do the hike, and the water was too high. That hike, you have to cross the creek a couple of times, and we deemed it wasn't safe, and so we turned around and continued the day into the evening, built a huge fire, ate delicious dinner, and just we were in that routine of sleeping under the stars, and really not caring about the world around us. And then we woke up the next morning to snow. It was the only time it had snowed the entire trip. And I think that was kind of a metaphor of what was to come. And we woke up, started kind of packing up our stuff after a layover day, getting ready to go on the water. And one of the girls said that her tent mate wasn't there. And at first, we were kind of like, oh, maybe she tried to do the hike again. She was super ambitious, and she really wanted to do that hike and was disappointed at the fact that we had to turn around. So a couple of us started going back up the hike, you know, thinking maybe she was up there. And there was also a neighboring camp. That was the only time we had somebody else near us. So a couple of us wandered over there. This was super casual, by the way. Like, we didn't think of anything, you know. Someone was missing. It was okay. And then an hour passed, and she wasn't back. The other camp hadn't seen her. We didn't see her on the hike, and we started to explore the camp. And Tepetz camp is, there's no eddies, really, where that is. And eddies for, I mean, I guess you guys are probably all river people and know what an eddy is. But it's fast water rushing by. And so we started making our way as far as we could, kind of setting up a more organized plan and really trying to figure out what happened. And at that point, we were doing a big grid search. So all of us split out and walked our way to the as far as we could go, which wasn't very far because the water rushes up to the beach site and it kind of cliffs out. So you really, there's not many places you could be. And we set a time. We said at 1 o'clock, if we don't find her, we're calling search and rescue. And I had this weird feeling. At 11 o'clock, I was like, we're not finding her. There's nowhere else we could go. Her best friend was on the trip, and she wasn't giving up hope. And so at around 12 o'clock, we came back and sat around a circle and waited for the last people of the searches to come find us. They came running up the beach, and they found one boot along the riverside. And at that point, we decided to call search and rescue. We alerted the other group and let them know that we had a missing person. And she was missing. She was gone. We had search and rescue come down, and choppers were flying in and out with search parties. And we were there at that camp for 4 days, waiting, looking, hoping. And the head river ranger said, "This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You can continue, or we can fly you out if you want, or you can continue on, and it's up to you." We decided to leave it up to the best friend, whose parents were at the north rim of the Grand Canyon, and she wanted to stay, and so we decided to stay. We continued the rest of the trip. It was different. I mean, it was a totally different trip, but that trip changed my life. And it's one of those things you read about and you don't think it happens to you, especially in this town. You're always reading about somebody that died in an adventure. And but she was found 3 months later, 30 miles downstream. And I want to thank her because she is one of the reasons why I'm here today doing what I love.
Wow. Thanks for sharing. That's heavy. I know everybody was like, "They're going to find her. They're going to find her." So, Jody, when you're ready, I am going to let you pick our lucky next storyteller. All right. Welcome, please, Leah Cass.
Our camp counselor, Laura, declared the rain sprinkling down upon us to be a clearing shower. She said it was going to stop and be clear for 5 days, which was the planned length of our backpacking trip, which was my first. But she was wrong. The rain was actually the beginning of a record-setting hurricane called Hurricane Bell in 1976 in Vermont. I was 12. I was smaller than today's 10-year-olds. I had $2 too small hiking boots, which create instant blisters. And there was a bar in my pack gouging my back. So we hiked into our hurricane, got to camp, cooked dinner, and gathered at the stream to wash greasy dishes in cold water with gravel, which doesn't work. But we tried. And as we did, the counselor, Laura, slipped and fell into the stream, drenching both of her boots, which amused us. But even more so later when she tried to dry them by the fire, and they burst into flames and melted. At that point, my friend Terry Silvio began her habit of putting everything to song. Late one night, while we were all washing, Laura slipped and fell into the stream. Gonna be a hot night in the old boot tonight. The next day it rained in torrents. We wore army surplus rain ponchos, which blew like kites but did not keep out any rain. Everyone else had these luxurious padded hip belts on their packs, but mine didn't come with any, so I had made one out of a leather belt and been proud. But now I had brutal purple welts on my hips, which hurt like hell, like my feet, but in a different flavor. So I was miserable. Everyone else was cheerful. And we all got wetter and wetter. That night, we arranged our sleeping bags and bodies every which way like puzzle pieces on the floor of a wooden lean-to. And in the night, I wheezed and shivered because I had asthma, and I also had the heaviest, bulkiest, least warm sleeping bag. But other things happened too. One girl tripped over another getting up to pee and sprained her ankle. And my friend Terry squirmed in her sleep, and without waking, she flailed one arm, which punched Laura in the nose and gave her a nosebleed. So in the morning, Terry was cheerful and musical. I was miserable, and as you notice, not musical. The girl with the sprained ankle was stoic. And Laura read the compass upside down, and we got lost. So I'd been feeling lost all along, but now we were all lost. Really lost, truly lost, in a hurricane, which we didn't know was a hurricane. To us, it was rain. It rained harder and harder and harder, and all day long, our campsite did not appear. But finally, we emerged onto a dirt road, and then appeared an actual house with a big grassy yard drenched beneath vicious, vicious sheets of rain. Laura produced a big clear sheet of plastic, which looked a lot like the sheets of rain. "See if you can figure out a way to set up a shelter," she suggested. "We'll try to get permission to camp here." And off went the two counselors in search of a homeowner. So there really were two counselors, but I hardly remember the second one. And I think it's because she didn't call a hurricane a clearing shower, fall in the stream, ignite her boots, get punched in the nose in her sleep, or read a compass upside down. So she did not imprint on my memory. So when the counselors returned, they looked just totally shaken. They looked really like mortified, terrified. And the two beer-guzzling rednecks they had found had chuckled, elbowed each other, and said, "Yeah, Joe, we'll show the girls where to camp." So we were going to be raped and murdered in the night. And as we pondered that, one of the men appeared and said that we should forget that sideways rain and come in the house. So we followed him. Inside, it was wild with the clamor of ragged children. It was pungent with the aroma of Chef Boyardee SpaghettiOs, which were soon served to us. It was the most wonderful way to be found, and I could have spent the rest of my life with those rednecks and their SpaghettiOs.
Thanks for listening. You can find more details and storytelling tips at tclib.org/cabinfever. See you at the slam.
Hey, everybody, turn off the TV. Meet me down at the library.